You're listening to the Small Business Talk podcast with Kathy Smith, episode 85.
Small Business Talk is a podcast for business owners and entrepreneurs who want a better way to run their businesses without spending years doing it the hard way. Small Business Talk is hosted by Kathy Smith, who has run the same marketing agency for more than 17 years. And help hundreds of business owners achieve their marketing goals.
Welcome to Small Business Talk. Today, my guest is Karina Ford, and she's from CAIT Business Consulting. And Karina is a cybersecurity expert. So as that's all becoming a hot topic at the moment, we thought that we might discuss it on Small Business Talk. Welcome, Karina.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I'm very glad to be here with you today.
So we're going to talk about the real risks of cybersecurity to small businesses and then some tips to protect our businesses and our family. But would you like to start by giving us the 2-minute elevator pitch of what you do and why you're here?
Yeah, so I provide basically cyber awareness training to small to medium size and enterprise size customers. I've been in the industry for over 20 years, started off in the IT industry, and then in the last number of years have specialized in cybersecurity and specialized more so in the last year in cyber awareness training. It's becoming very well known that humans and people are a huge risk, if not the biggest risk, when it comes to cybersecurity. So it's very important that we train people and train staff to eliminate the risk. And as I always say, create human firewalls within your business. So that's basically what I do. I'm really, really passionate about it. And the reason I think why I got into cyber awareness training was in my small business customers that I looked after in the IT space. I would often see companies getting hacked. Somebody clicking on an email, and the person that maybe clicked on the email then was left feeling really bad because they, you know, had a cyber attack or brought a cyber attack in. For me, I really want to help people not become that person that clicks on that email and brings the organization down.
And that's just absolutely the way to go, isn't it? Prevention is always better than cure. So if you can educate yourself and your staff to be aware of that,
yeah,
and being in that web design industry, we see it all the time, and sometimes we get to clean up other people's messes when it hasn't been looked after correctly.
Yeah.
So how about you give us a few tips on how we can recognize those emails in particular as being a possible attack?
Yeah, well, emails, they reckon that 80% of cyber attacks are due to phishing email. And phishing, it's if you don't know, it's basically scam emails. A lot of funny sort of quotes about out there about phishing, but you have different types of phishing. So you have just general phishing, or then you have spear phishing, which is very targeted attacks. And basically the emails that come in, the first thing that you should always check is who has sent the email, and check the email address for any abnormalities. So for instance, if it's coming from yourself, Kathy, making sure that the name is spelled correctly and hovering over the email address just to make sure that it is the proper one. If you don't know who the email is from, I normally don't open it or reply to it because it's just become so frequent. I've seen organizations with receiving from 5,000 to 10,000 spam emails in a month, and off that, generally you can see anywhere between 10 to maybe 30% of those are, you know, real attacks on an organization. So that's the first thing. And then it's look at, what are they requesting you to do? And is there a sense of urgency? The criminals try to always, you know, it's something urgent and something needs to be done now. You know, example that I've seen in the past is, you know, maybe a CEO or a managing director being in one country and then emailing staff in another country, but the hacker hacking in and knowing when that CEO is maybe in bed and sending an email to say, you know, I'm going to be in bed by the time you get this. Don't ask any questions. Just pay the invoice. So it's normally either they're trying to get you to click on a link, download an attachment, or pay a sum of money. So, you know, it's those kind of things that you need to be wary of. And I always say, if it doesn't feel or sound right, just don't do it. Just don't do whatever it is. And like with links and emails, always hover over, put your mouse over the link and look to see where it's going. That's normally a telltale sign. If it's going to a website that you don't know, then I wouldn't click on it. And as well, like if somebody sends you an email and it seems suspicious, but it looks legit, it's asking you to do something, lift the phone and speak to the person and just say, just received this email. You know, I think we forget that we have phones. Everybody has a mobile nowadays, you know, and we all rely heavily on email. Send a text message, you know, communicate in an alternative way. The last thing you want to do is reply to that email, because if you're replying, then the hacker knows that, you know, oh, I might have got this person, and it gives them a little bit of an adrenaline fun. Okay, let's how do we, you know, reassure them that it's the right person. So never ever reply. Always try and check by an alternative means.
Yes, we see that a lot where you get things from Facebook or some of the big companies, but it's here in Australia, it's .com.au, yeah. Whereas, of course, Facebook isn't an AU, or you'll see them and they're .z or .nz or .za is very common as well.
Yeah,
check the N's to make sure that they are actually the legitimate company.
And also think, like, I'm working with some organisations at the moment on doing phishing campaigns. So we're testing their staff to see who clicks on what. And it's necessary because it's training staff to identify phishing emails. But, you know, when you see one, say, that's from your business email and it's asking you to, you know, it's from Facebook or LinkedIn or eBay, think, do I use my business email for those accounts? And that should be your first alarm or your red flag, as we call it in the industry. So, you know, start to think, why am I receiving this, you know, and just not automatically click? We live in a very fast-paced world, and I think, you know, we don't take the time to actually stop and think, and that's what these criminals know.
Yes, and then they use major banks. You'll get a whole pile of emails saying that your credit cards have been stopped, but it won't actually be a bank that you use, but they just keep sending them. So in Australia, there's four big banks. So most people would have an account in one of those four, or then they use the subsidiary banks. So, of course, in America and the UK, you guys have major banks too. So if it's not your bank, obviously it's not for you. And if it is, like Karina says, just make sure that you actually ring.
Yeah.
Most of the banks have helplines. So ring and ask before you click on anything like that.
I've received a few recently from PayPal, and it's to an old email account that I had back when I was a student a long time ago. And I don't really use that account anymore because it's mostly full of spam emails. This one from PayPal keeps coming and coming. Your account is going to be locked if you don't change your password. Please click here. But I know I never use PayPal with that account ever. So, but it could be, you know, you could very easily fall victim to that, you know, if you didn't stop. And the first time when I seen the email, I actually was like, oh, because PayPal is an account I use very, very often in my business and in my personal life. And I was like, oh, I don't want my PayPal account to get locked. I have things that I need to do with it. And, you know, I had to stop for a minute and go, hold on. That's the wrong email. So, you know, you just need to just think about it before you react to whatever they're asking you to do. Another common one that everybody's reporting at the moment is Netflix. They know people are at home and spending more time on Netflix during this period. So they're playing on that as well. And I've actually had one of my cousins, unfortunately, fell victim to it. She didn't think anything of it. And then she discovered that her Netflix account had been hacked by somebody and they'd been just using it to watch Netflix for free. So
I guess the other thing too, a lot of people think that they should unsubscribe to some of these spam emails because they're getting them all the time. But like you've just said before, that means that they now know that that is an active email address.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to actually get more things rather than less because they know that there is somebody behind that email.
Yeah. And that sort of is one of my tips that I do give people quite often is have multiple mailboxes. You know, one that you use for, you know, maybe subscriptions that you want to have online. Nowadays, everybody wants your email address, even to read articles or to get information. So have an email address that you're willing to just have junk emails come into, because you know as soon as you give your email address to most organizations are going to start spamming you, and then have one for, you know, accounts that you need to monitor and get proper emails from, such as PayPal or Netflix or your bank, you know, and then have, obviously, if you've a business account. But I would always say, always have one that's for general spam that you is going to be flooded, and then you don't run the risk of having your, you know, the emails that you want going to sort of getting lost in the noise.
Yes, that's perfect. We always say have a throwaway email to use for those subscriptions.
Yeah.
And especially things that you're just sort of investigating and you're not really sure whether it's for you. And then if you do become a client of theirs or a customer, you can then actually message them and say, hey, can you change it to this email? So that's perfect. Okay, so we're not clicking on suspicious emails. We're checking to make sure that they are actually come from who they've come from. So what about emails that look like they've come from yourself? I'm noticing, and clients are getting a lot of those where it looks like it's either come from somebody within your organization or your actual email address. And when you hover over it, it does actually look legit. So what would you suggest there?
They are what you call spoofing emails, and they've been around for quite a long time as well. Normally, you would see them targets of like managing directors or CEOs or high profile people within organizations. And it's normally, again, asking for financial transactions. So it's either they have spoofed your email address, so therefore they use technology to make it look like it's come from you, or they've actually hacked into your mailbox and are sending emails from your mailbox. And that has been something that I have seen quite a lot over the last number of years. You need to get your IT company, whoever looks after your email, onto that and get them to check, you know, how have they had access to your emails? Have they put a forwarder on your mailbox so that it's going somewhere else? You know, and even going in and checking your sent and your deleted items. I've seen recently somebody that got their Instagram account hacked, their business Instagram account, and she couldn't understand how they'd got approval for the emails, but they'd hacked in and they were, you know, able to approve the emails and then get access that way. It was only through recovering her old emails. So they've been smart enough to know how to completely purge and delete them out. But she had a backup. She restored the backup a number of days, and then she could see the emails had come in, and that's how they'd got gained access. Thankfully, she got her Instagram account back, but it just is one of those things that you need to be wary of. You know, I also say, like, if you have become victim of the spoofing or they've hacked into your mailbox, let your clients know and let your customers know that if there's something suspicious going on, to alert you, because, you know, you just don't want to ignore it either.
No, well, part of the privacy of some countries is that you actually do have to report it.
Exactly.
So, and transparency is always the best way. You personally haven't done anything wrong.
No.
So if you just let your customers know that there's been an issue, they're going to be more than happy to help you out. Whereas if you don't and then something happens, they may even think that you have done something.
Yeah.
So, transparency is always the way to go.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not clicking on any of that. We've checked. We've got our IT people sorting it out. What other suggestions would you have that we should be looking out for?
Now, again, it depends on the size of the business. So, you know, different advice for different levels and different sizes and different types of businesses. So, you know, there's not one blanket approach to cybersecurity. And I suppose that's not a problem, but it's a consideration. So, like, you might be a small business and you just need to do the minimum necessity, or you might be a larger organization and, you know, you obviously need to protect your people and protect your data. But, you know, as a blanket rule, I would always say backup is key. You know, because you have to plan for the inevitable, even though you may have spent, you know, a lot of money on your IT infrastructure and making sure that your security is up to date and, you know, you feel like you've done the best, there always is the risk. You look at some of the larger organizations that have been in the media that have had cyber breaches, they've all invested heavily in their IT and infrastructure, but somehow these guys seem to know how to get in. So you want to make sure that you're able to recover from your backup, and especially in events like ransomware, where they've encrypted your files and you then have to either pay a ransom or recover from backup. So I would always say, number one, no matter what size of organization you are, everybody has critical data. Every company, no matter if you're small, medium or large, you have data that you need to keep going and you need for your business to recover. So back it up. Now, I also strongly advise is to always check that the backups are running And even if you outsource your IT, you know, I wouldn't trust my company's data in somebody else's services to make sure that it's backing up. I would want them to prove to me. And maybe that's just the nature of the game that I'm in. But again, you know, the backup is only as good as its last test. You know, so you want to be sure that, you know, it's working and that you can test it and it's been recovered. Always suggest an organization that is of a decent size and they cannot sustain a downtime anything more than one day, you should regularly do a disaster recovery test, which means that your IT company comes in, acts as if your systems are down, whether it's through a hack or through something else, and you know exactly how long it is for your system to come back online from the backups, because then you can plan and then you can know how much it's going to take or cost for you to be offline for that period of time. And then there's things that you can put in place to make sure that you can recover and maybe aren't offline for as long.
Great points. And definitely checking your backup. I've heard many horror stories, particularly accountants that have been backing religiously for a long time, only to find that their backup actually doesn't work. Yeah. They're going to an external hard drive that's not there. The hard drive is full. They've had some sort of issues that's corrupted it. So we have a wonderful backup, but we can't use it. And all of those kind of horror stories. So absolutely
there
great
is
point.
Awesome backup technology out there nowadays, and there is awesome service providers that offer offsite backups and check your backups. So, you know, if it is, you know, a part of your business really relies on your data and your IT systems, it is a worthwhile investment just to give you peace of mind. You know, and I always think of it as an insurance policy in case the inevitable happens. Because cybersecurity, unfortunately, you know, in the industry, you'll hear a lot of people saying it's not if, it's when. And unfortunately, it's true. You know, we all sit and, you know, wonder when, who's next. You know, and even in the paper today, I've seen a local company who's been hit with ransomware, quite a significant size. And it just shows it could be anybody.
Yes, and even small businesses, even micro and hobby businesses, they think, well, I've got nothing to steal, but your identity, they can steal your identity. And they do hit small businesses and hobby businesses.
And solo entrepreneurs, I've seen a lot of, you know, online businesses. So like the era of the influencer is very large right now, and we've got all these people selling products on Instagram or, you know, being these influencers. And I know a lady in the UK who lost her Instagram account that had 55,000 followers and she sold products. So she has lost her client base and didn't get it back.
There'd be no way to recover that. And also, generally, depending on how your business is set up, she probably wouldn't even have a database of those clients.
Exactly.
So that's something you've always got to remember when you're running your business completely on social media, that you need to get them off social media so you can get a database. So for some of our smaller listeners, our micro businesses, our hobby businesses and our solopreneurs who may not be able to afford like the IT companies and the servicing, what do you think about doing offline backups? So to the cloud or Google Drive or Dropbox or any of the other cloud-based services, is that safe? Is that something good to do, or is that just opening another can of worms?
It's good practice to do, but again, it depends how you're doing it. Say, for instance, you use some of these online cloud services like OneDrive or Google Drive, and you're just, you know, syncing your data from your computer up to the cloud. Well, you may have deleted or, you know, you may have had a ransomware encrypt files and you don't realize for maybe 2 to 3 weeks. And if you don't have a long enough service or not paying for it, you may not be able to revert back. So again, you just need to check what the backup policies is with those online services, and just don't automatically think because you're using an online service and it's syncing that your data is going to be there. You know, you need to check what their T's and C's are, what you're paying for, and how far back you can actually recover. Because in the instance of like a ransomware, you know, I've seen some where they actually, if they go undetected, they start to encrypt your shared drive, and then those encrypted files sync to your online platform. And if you don't have a backup of the online platform, then you may not be fit to recover. So again, just have a think logically and test. I always say test, you know, how are you going to get that data back? Also, like, you know, I know it's old technology and old school, but for small micro businesses or, you know, that's maybe just starting off and doesn't have a huge budget, go and buy a USB drive and, you know, once every couple of weeks, take a copy of your files. Do you know what I mean? It's not something that I would, you know, advise if you can prevent it. But if there's nothing else, at least it's some kind of measure. I wouldn't, you know, for a business that's been going for a number of years and has a little bit of budget and relies heavily on IT, it's not, you know, USB drives are known to be notorious for failing and they're always the culprit when you're having issues with backups. So I wouldn't advise it as a method of backup. But if you have no other means and you're in the startup phase, definitely that would be an alternative solution.
So what about an external drive? So something a bit more than a USB. Are they safe enough to do? Would you maybe, if you're only in that really small startup phase, that you could have a couple and then maybe get one stored at a trusted friend or parents or spouse's parents or whatever, so that it's actually not at your premises in case there is an event of an unfortunate break-in or a fire or something like that? Is that a good thing to do for a really small or just a startup business?
Yeah, it is. It is an alternative solution. Again, you know, you have to think about what data you're storing on that. Again, you know, and if you're going to back up and you're going to encrypt that data and you're going to make sure if somebody gets access to that drive. So if you're storing, you know, customers' information, other than, you know, making sure that you can recover it in an event of a cyber attack, you also need to think about if you lose that drive or somebody else gets their hand on that drive, what data are you storing on those drives? Because under the Privacy Act, that could be considered a breach. You might leave it on the train or the bus, or do you know what I mean? It's just things you have to consider when you're using USB drives. So it still is a, you know, it has its place in technology, but still you have to consider the risks that comes along with that type of technology.
For sure. And of course, breaching privacy law is huge. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely get some advice on that kind of thing to make sure that, one, you are protecting yourself, but you're also protecting your customers. That's huge. So would that be a similar sort of thing if you were backing it up just to a OneDrive or a Google Drive or Dropbox or any of the other cloud variety ones? Does that need to be password protected or encrypted or something to just make sure you're safe there?
Yeah, I would suggest, depending on what the information is that you store, if it's not personal information and it's not sensitive, then it's fine, probably not. But most of those cloud services do offer encryption options. Just have a look at the settings to see what options are there. And there are loads of software tools that you can purchase to do hard drive encryption to encrypt all your data. So again, it depends what industry you're in, what data you're holding. Some industries don't hold any personal data. You know, the data that they have is, you know, general knowledge, and if it got into the wrong hands, it wouldn't really make much difference. Again, it just depends, like, what information that you're holding belong to somebody.
And I guess that's a really good point too, is be careful what data you're putting out there on yourself. So Facebook, of course, likes to have your birthday and your phone number and all of that. If you've got that all public, suddenly somebody else has got your identity, because now they have your phone number, they have your birthday, they have your favorite color, they have the first school you went to and all of that. Very aware of what you're putting out there. Yeah.
That's another topic on its own, Kathy. This year in particular, I've just seen, you know, the rise of people giving away unnecessary information. And especially when, you know, back in March when COVID struck and I think people started to be more at home and maybe boredom set in. But I just seen the rise of people sharing information, especially on platforms like Facebook and Instagram. All these games started to appear as, what's your pet's name? Where did you last go on holidays? What's your favorite color? You know, and I was just like, guys, this is social engineering at best. Please stop it. And then you'd see other ones, what type of unicorn are you? And you're just thinking, what information have you got or given to get what type of unicorn you are? You know, you may have had to give your name, your email address, maybe your date of birth. And these are all, you know, companies gathering information to use against you. So, yeah, we want to have a bit of fun and use technology. But again, just be fair, just think about what it is that you're putting out there. The other thing is on the rise is CEO fraud. And CEO fraud, even, you know, it's called CEO fraud in the industry, but it's basically anyone in high positions that start to do research about you on your social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and then use that to target you. It's one to be mindful of if you're in a position that could, you know, maybe be abused. Especially even like executive assistants, believe it or not, they're a huge target because sometimes they know more information about CEO or managing director than they do themselves because they're controlling their diaries, they're looking after their emails and, you know, they're, you know, their right-hand person. Sometimes they can be a huge target as well. So just be mindful of what your role is and how people could leverage that role to maybe infiltrate or attack a company.
For sure. So what about things like password companies? People have problems with remembering their passwords. So there's a whole pile of different ones where you just basically have to remember one password and it will change passwords and allow team and sort of thing to get in without knowing your personal password. So what do you think about those? Are they safe to use? A good practice, not good practice?
Again, this is a difficult area because there's so many different opinions on it. Now, I would say that if you're a person that doesn't remember passwords easily or has loads of passwords, it's probably better to use a password manager than to try and manage it yourself or keep it on an Excel document on your computer, which is a big And believe it or not, the amount of organizations that I go into and people are still doing it, it's just crazy. But you've one password to remember. And yes, there is a small risk that that company may be hacked, but it's very highly unlikely, you know, and the risk, if you think about the risk factor compared to that company being hacked to you not changing your passwords, there's a website that shows all the data breaches in the last 3 to 4 years. And normally when I do face-to-face or online webinars, I show an infographic of some of the data breaches. So like things like MyFitnessPal, and we're all fitness gurus like to use MyFitnessPal from time to time. Most women have it on their phone, believe it or not. It got hacked a number of years ago. So if you use the password of MyFitnessPal, if you use that same password in your business or on your banking, well, the hackers have that password. And some people just don't correlate the link between all these data breaches and their passwords. So I often say, if you haven't changed your password in the last 6 months, the hackers probably already have your password. And that's why it's so important to change it. So therefore, password managers are an easier way to manage that. I will admit I do use one myself because I have hundreds of passwords from all the online and everything. I do have faith in it. I do trust it. You know, I change the password on it regularly. I let it manage my online accounts and let it update my online passwords regularly. It also allows me to give access to some of my staff and virtual assistants so that I don't have to share my passwords to them. You know, so it is definitely a good tool to use, especially if you for your home and for small businesses. I can see how in maybe larger organizations that it's a bit more tricky to implement something like that, but there's other tools that they put in place to you don't need a password manager.
Perfect. Okay, so wrapping up, have you got a couple of last tips that we should be being careful of or things that we can do for our family or business?
I always say is talk about it, you know, with your family and with your friends. I think there's not enough awareness around the scams online. In Australia, you know, this one of the second biggest scam is, believe it or not, romance scams. And it's, you know, in this year, 2020, I think there's something so far like $22 million has been lost in Australia due to romance scams.
Oh, wow.
I know. I was surprised when I seen it myself. Talk about it to family and friends. Most of the organizations that I work with were very much about upskilling their staff so that they can bring those skills, you know, back to their family. And I always say, don't be afraid of cybersecurity. It's like protecting any asset that you have, such as your home or your car. You just didn't get up one morning and realize you need to lock your front door and, you know, put on your alarm. You were taught these things. So now you're being taught how to protect your online presence. Don't fear it. You know, we don't stay at home and not go out because we're afraid of crime that's happening all around us. You know, we know how to protect ourselves. So same with using computers. We're going to continue. Technology's awesome. The amount of things that we can do with technology these days. So we just need to learn how to protect it and use it to protect ourselves from the criminals. And I suppose my other tips is passwords is number one. You know, between backups and passwords, there are the two important things. If you get both of those right, you're in a good way of at least somehow protecting yourself. But I could talk about it all day. There's so many different areas, even things like free Wi-Fi. Should you use it or should you not? You know, there's just so many things to consider in this area. You know, if you start at the basics, make sure your data is backed up and you've changed your passwords regularly, well, you're on the right track to making some improvements.
Perfect. So now that you've opened the can of worms on free Wi-Fi, you better tell us whether we should or shouldn't be using it.
I would say no, don't use it unless you're using it on a device that is not connected to anything else. But if you're using it on a, say, a mobile phone that you use for your banking, do not use it. Most mobile phone plans now come with huge amounts of data. So there really isn't a need, you know, to use free Wi-Fi. If you've got a kid who has or kids that have, you know, maybe some kind of gaming that they do online and they want to use free Wi-Fi, maybe, as long as that's all they're doing. But I never use it anywhere unless I'm really, 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 really stuck. There's a famous hacker who came to Perth last year and he done a few live hacks and he showed how easy it was to, you know, hack Wi-Fi. And he talked about, you know, you can go into this middle of Perth and set up a Wi-Fi access point and call it McDonald's free Wi-Fi, and, you know, it'll connect to devices that have had the same Wi-Fi name, and then, you know, that's how you get access. So it's just one of those things that you just shouldn't do.
So when we are able to travel again, is it safe to use hotel Wi-Fi and that sort of thing, or are we running into the same sort of issues?
It depends on the hotel and how they manage their Wi-Fi. Again, I would be a bit cautious, but are you going to be a target for a cyber criminal? If you're just a normal person and the Wi-Fi is just for your room and every room has different, then you should be fine. But if you are, you know, the CEO or managing director of a organization and you're a high profile person and, you know, you may be a target, I'd be more cautious of using free Wi-Fi. So, yeah, it really depends on the data that you have on your computer and your level of security. I know I just don't use it anywhere. And it's probably because I'm super suspicious. But I have, you know, my hotspot from my mobile phone anywhere that I go and I need to use my laptop. It's just one of those things that you just don't know if it's secure or not, you know. And there's been reports of even in airports and other public places, you know, you plug in your phone into a USB port to charge it, you know, that they have skimming devices on those as well, then connect to your phone and to hack your phone. So, you know, you just need to think, do I really need to do this? Is there another alternative? There's another alternative, I probably would take it.
Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. And I think we're going to have to come back, have another go, because we've just touched the surface and there's so many more questions I want to ask you. Thank you so much. And if people would like to know more about you and where to find you, where would they look?
Yeah, you can go to my website. It's www.cait.com.au, or there's cait.online. I'm also on Facebook. I've got a business Facebook page, Kate Business Consulting. Obviously, my LinkedIn, on my Instagram account. So I try to share as many tips as possible on a weekly basis and try and teach people. I'm also in the process of creating some online courses to help educate, you know, people starting out in business, what they need to consider and, you know, how to protect their online, because I've just seen a growing trend of, you know, solopreneurs and online businesses and they just don't know the risks. That's their whole business.
Fabulous. So we'll definitely drop all of those in the show notes. And when you've got your courses live, you'll definitely have to come back and have another chat with us. But I do have five final questions for you that I ask all my podcast guests.
Okay.
So are you game?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm very game.
What is the best advice given to you by a mentor?
Believe in myself.
Wonderful. We're getting a lot of that. Back yourself, have confidence, yep, and just do it. So yep, absolutely wonderful. What is the biggest help that you have received since starting your business?
There's been a number of things, but I have a personal friend who is a business coach. She's just given me the confidence and advice to just be me and that people will resonate with me. And so I think, I suppose, just following my passion and what I really love. And, you know, at the start of my business, you know, I tried to maybe do too many things, such as, you know, offering loads of different services. But you know, now just following my true passion, which is educating people on cybersecurity. I don't even feel like I'm working most days. I love it that much. So I think that's been the best piece of advice for me.
And that's a wonderful thing to have, isn't it? To be able to go to work every day, but it's not work, it's enjoyment. So well done. Okay, what is the one thing that you have to do every day, your non-negotiable?
Go for a walk. I have to go for a walk every day. You know, we sit at a desk. I sit, sometimes can sit at a desk for up to 10 hours a day because I'm studying at the moment as well. If I don't schedule in a walk, I'm not me. So go for a walk.
Let's hope that you're not sitting there constantly. You are getting up and having breaks.
Exactly, yes. Looking after my health.
Excellent. What is your favorite business book and why?
Ooh, well, I've one. It's called Super Connector, and it's about building relationships with people. That is really valuable in business, and being somebody that's not looking to meet somebody just to, you know, sell to them, but being a person that can say, I know who you need to talk to, and building connections and networks around you. I think that's been really important for me in my business, especially when you go to networking events. I'm always thinking about other people and not myself. So being that connector of people, I think that's come back twofold for me. So everything you give out, you get back much more in return.
Definitely the law of reciprocity. And also people aren't scared to talk to you then because they know that you're going to give value and not just the salesy pitch. Yeah. And then when it's appropriate, then you can talk to them about possibly buying.
Yeah. And I'm reading one at the moment, and I think it's going to become my new favorite, but it's around neuroscience and looking at people's behaviors in cybersecurity and how people's behaviors and mindset is sort of some of the attributes is the way that they behave when they're using a computer. It's a really interesting topic for me. It's called Transformational Security Awareness by Perry Carpenter.
Wow, that's definitely a different one. So anybody who's had a bit of a perk of enthusiasm over this podcast, look that up as well. What do you wish you had known when you started your business?
Just do it. Stop doubting yourself and just do it. You know, when you start off in business, especially if you've been in employment for a long time, like I was in employment for probably 20 years on and off, you sort of doubt your skills and your knowledge and can I run a business and does people want to? Just don't doubt yourself. Just back yourself fully, and done is better than not done. I'm a perfectionist, I will admit. And I think you have to let go of that perfectionism. Go on and do it and speak to as many people as possible.
Yes. And I think if you're authentically you, then people will be drawn to you. You're not going to draw everybody, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Let them go and find their person, because you will definitely be the person for some people.
Yeah.
And yeah, and live in your own skin, because it's so hard to be trying to be somebody else all the time. So
it's so true. Yeah. And even like, you know, I have red hair, and you know, those are times when I thought, you know, the red hair didn't really suit the business arena, but it's me. It's who I am. I've always had it, and I embrace it now. And even having, you know, an Irish accent, you know, I was a little bit afraid of public speaking because I thought people wouldn't understand me. And there probably is sometimes they're sitting going, what did she just say? But hopefully it's not too much of the time.
Oh, I think you do quite well. And for the listeners that can't actually see the video, Katrina has the most beautiful red hair and matching glasses. So wonderful. And my daughter has red hair, so I must admit I do have a soft spot for redheads. And you are who you are, so just embrace it and enjoy. So thank you so much, Katrina Ford. We are very happy to have you. And like I say, we will definitely program you in again for a future episode. So is there anything that you would like to end off?
No, just want to thank you, Kathy, for giving me the opportunity to speak to your audience today. I'm hugely passionate, and I just want to educate and tell as many people as possible about how to protect themselves from cybersecurity. I'm on a little bit of a mission, and I feel this is what I was sent here to do. And I just want to help as many people realize that it doesn't have to be difficult or complicated, and just do some of the basic things and you should be not too bad.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. And we will drop all your links in the show notes. Until next time, SBT community, stay safe, be careful, and have fun.
Don't forget to subscribe to Small Business Talk podcast and head on over to smallbusinesstalk.com.au/downloads for all the show notes and links to this episode. Remember, to be great, you must start. Pick one tip from today's episode, take action, and implement it. Let's meet again next week at the same time and place. Until then, take action. And SBT community, enjoy your journey.